You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Oh, I just realized that I've been talking without my microphone on, and
yeah. Well, I sat here and I said to myself, oh, that appears to be that.
Yeah. I did a really, really good intro. Anyway, it's the 24th of December, 2017. This is Connecting Consciousness on Ever Beyond Radio, broadcast through the Wolf Spirit Media Network. And this is Simon Parks. Good afternoon. How are you?
I've got flu.
Apparently
it's called Aussie flu, because last time it appeared in Australia, they all the pharmaceuticals got their vaccines ready, vaccinated everyone, and it wasn't the right one. Ha ha. So always said inoculations against flu were ridiculous. So it's a real flu. So just for the record, then, my voice will sound the way it is today. I've not supped with the devil. I don't have a demon with me. There's nobody sitting in the background poking me with a stick. I do actually have the flu. So, first of all, I'm really glad to do the hour, because I missed our last scheduled show because I was at Dartington Hall doing the live conference. And I want to quickly just say that should be or will be up on YouTube very quickly.
Hey,
unfortunately, David Icke couldn't do the live connection. He was due to. He lost his voice. Now, I don't know whether he lost it through the same thing that I've got, or whether it was the speaking tour was just a bit much, but he has promised to come back and do another one. We had Robert David Steele, the ex-CIA guy, he came on. Sasha Stone came on. I was, you know, there as well. And I wanted to thank everyone. It was a very good conference, about 300 or so people there, which is very good the week before Christmas. Beautiful location. And there was some dissent in the audience. They started to argue with each other, which I thought was excellent. I've been asked whether I wanted to have that kept in or take it out. I've decided to keep it in. One person was adamant that Hillary Clinton was a really good person, and tried to turn on me, and then the audience by and large turned on her, so she stormed out. During the interval, I had two people come up to me and say, well, we know all this, you're going to tell us, well, what we've got to do, what the answer is. So I tried to explain that actually you may have been on the show for 15-20 years. There are people who don't know it all, you know. I certainly don't know it all, and you know, please, you know, be cautious, because other people are interested. Anyway, at the afternoon sections, I said to the public, you know, I have had people come up and say that they know it all. So I'd just like to ask them, if you know it all about it, what have you done about it? And they just walked out as well. And then I had someone who really thought that we should stay in Europe, and there was a bit of an argy-bargy. So that's fun. Watch that. You always judge people by what they say. And that should be great. So that was a really good conference. Thank you. Enjoyed that. Before we go on to the questions, I had talked on, or I had put on my website, I can't remember now, that President Obama was in a bit of a pickle, as was the Clintons, because the current President Trump had received some information, and that Robert David Steele had also spoken about this, the ex-CIA guy. Trump had received some codes which allowed him to have names of paedophiles. And I'd said that what Trump was hoping to do was to start this process during the Christmas period. And lo and behold, on the 21st of this month, President Trump signed an executive order. He didn't refer to the word paedophiles. He's used the term child trafficking. The difference about this executive order is that buried in the small print, it actually says that any serving member of the government of the United States of America, or any previous member of the government, is not immune from prosecution. In other words, they are specifically going after individuals who are in government. You know, now who do we know who's in government that's got a bit of a dodgy past? Well, there's Hillary, there's the husband, and then there's Obama, and there's several others. So And that actually shows that he is really moving along now. So let's see what happens with that. And it's came out on the 21st of December. Very, very good move. Very good move. Right, okay. Let's crack on with the questions.
Agreed. That's excellent news, Simon. Very excellent news. Let's dive straight into the deep end here. This is from Del Sacto, and it's talking about the Gadsden flag. Are you familiar with it? This is a flag with a snake that is coiled, three times, I think, and, says, don't tread on me. It's the old libertarian flag.
Yes. I can't remember whether there's something inside the coils of the snake in the flag or whether it's just the coils are empty.
Right. Well, anyway, the question is, yeah. Is the Gadsden flag with the snake coiled three times into 666 referring to practitioners of the old religion? Is America's philosophy of freedom of religion code for Satanists to come to America to freely practice and eventually steer American society towards darkness? What was the U.S. founded under satanic influence rather than something higher?
No. Right. The Constitution, as we understand it, was by and large good. The individuals who created the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, many of them were members of what we would today call the Freemasons. But that didn't mean they were bad people. What it meant that they were part of secret societies, and they therefore wanted to lay out their building plans and their furniture in set ways, and they wanted to honour their rules and regulations. We shouldn't see that as satanic. They are separate until you get to the top of the pyramid where you've got the White Brotherhood, or beg your pardon, the Great White Brotherhood, because then you are enmeshing satanic values with Masonic values. But that's at the very top of the pyramid, and everyone else below that, whilst they may have a suspicion that there's something going on, they probably won't have any proof. It's only as you get to the very top. Now, the flag or the emblem you're referring to is a bit like what we call a snake in the grass. It means, if you tread on me, I will bite you. Now, that's really what that flag was referring to. It meant, if you try to hurt me or push me around, I will bite back, I will fight back. It was really about carving out a position in government, or corporations, or business, where you were allowed to hold a religion or a value or a cult, and not be persecuted. That's why you can be a Satanist today in many of the serving arms of the United States military. It's a bit harder now under Trump, and it was very easy under the previous presidents, but it's perfectly legal to declare yourself a Satanist and serve in many of the arms of the US military simply because they consider it a religion. That's very interesting. So I'm not clear in my mind that this flag or this emblem means come to America and do this. I think it's more about if you attack the Brotherhood, we will fight back. I think that's what that means. Thank you.
Okay. So there's a couple of questions here, and they're the same theme, which is chakras. What's your view on chakras and Kundalini as non-native? And about dissolving that kind of agreement, they say. So the idea that chakras are not really native to us, and they've been put in as a it's merely a control system.
Right. The New Age, in its true format, celebrates chakras, and you know, you can go to any New Agey shop, and you can find any amount of books on the chakras, on crystals, minerals for certain chakras, and this is true, actually, they will work. The point is, and I agree, that chakras are not necessarily a divine thing, not necessarily. But the fact is that we have them. So if we have them, and we know that the bad guys are trying to switch them off, which they are, they're doing so because they're trying to shut off a door which we have, or doors that we have. They are trying to control us through the chakras. So it's a two-edged sword. They can have a go at us, but if we can activate, particularly the pineal gland, if we can connect the chakras, then we can use it against the evil intent. As we evolve and leave this third dimension, the chakras in the traditional sense will play a weaker role. They sit as a middle person between the physical world and the energy world. They are real glands. They are real physical parts of your body, but they can action events and obtain information from the non-physical world. So they're like a gatekeeper that sits between the two. Now, when we leave the physical world, it is debatable that we would need the chakras. Now, were the chakras, the question is quite detailed. It's asking, were the chakras placed in and they're not part of humanity? I think chakras are natural, but they were utilized and altered so that they could be easily accessed. So we've got them, and I think rather than try and hide from it, we need to say, if we get them cleared or working and get any attachments removed from them, how can we best use them to enable us to develop? So I believe that chakras will end up being a weapon that the controllers never imagined could be used for the betterment of humanity. That's a really good question. The difficulty with it is that there are many decades of New Age history built on chakras. And if you were to publicly try and attack them 100%, you would draw all the bows and arrows that were available. So it is better, I think, if you're trying to move people to an understanding of a non-physical reality, that we think on chakras as having a dual role. It's a good question. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. So this is a question from Blue Amber. This is about the Aryans. Okay, so I'm going to kind of reverse her question because it's got the statements in the end and the question at the beginning. So I'm going to just put it around the other way. Because there are many different answers in the internet with regard to who are the Aryans. Some believe they are reptilian Nordic hybrids. Some believe they are a breakaway faction of the Pleiadians. Some believe Aryan is a race that evolved from reptilians. Some believe they're a group of Anunnaki. All of these answers make their identity blur, and I wish Simon could make this clear. So you said Aryans are aliens from the Orion. So does it mean they are not human? So could you give a brief description about their culture, their history, the genetics, personality? What do they look like, and what is their relationship with Aldebrans? So the Aryans and the Aldebrans.
Well, I'll get my oil paints out, and I'll get my oil paints out at the same time. I'll paint a background picture as well, if only we had the time. But it is a damn good question. Right. Just because something comes from Orion doesn't mean that it's got 10 eyes and there's a blob of jelly. Think about the connection that the ancient times of the pyramids had with not just Cyrus or Sirius, but with those from Orion. In fact, one of the supposed air shafts from the pyramid went to Orion, and I think we talked about this last time.
Yes, and of course the pyramids themselves describe Alnitak, Alnilam, and Mintaka of the belt of Orion.
Yes. Yes, and you know how any man or woman who has been to university, apart from the mind control, but it must have some intelligence, can look at the two patterns of the stars and the pyramids and not actually think, well, what is the possibility? What is the chance? And you need Mr. Spock from Star Trek to tell you how many millions to one against it would be. Anyway, look, there is a connection between Aldebaran a faction of the Pleiades, and a number of other humanoid groups that were active, particularly during the time of what we call the Third Reich. The group that were visiting Billy Meyer were this same faction, part of this faction. This faction had given their technology to the Germans. The Germans then became the Nazis. And that is why, for the 20 years after the end of the Second World War, so many UFOs that were photographed or described looked or sounded remarkably like the same craft that had been given to the Nazis, who really did create some of the most amazing technologies. And just before we go off the subject too much, one of the big questions that I'm often asked by people who've done a lot of research and clearly know their stuff is, well, if Adolf Hitler had flying saucers, in the true sense of the word, as things were called in the 1940s, of course, well, why didn't he win? And why did the Americans, the British, etc., why did they go on to win? Why on earth didn't he win? And the reality was that he did oversee and have at his disposal flying discs, but he had no capability of arming them. And some of the pictures are genuine, where they put 20mm or 30mm cannon on these craft, because they did not at that stage have a microwave weapon. That's what they were working on. They didn't have a microwave weapon ready. It was in the experimental stage, as was the very early energy weapon. Couldn't use it. So they resorted to physical weapons. And of course, if you fire a shot through an electromagnetic field, it completely destabilizes everything. So they had the capability to fly these things, and but they couldn't make weapons out of them. And that is why. So what they said was, look, we need 2 to 3 years before we can weaponize them. Let's take them off to Antarctica, hide them away, and then we'll work like crazy to get a weapon for them. And that's what that was all about. So the group that brought them were a faction of the Palladian group, part of the Aldebaran group, allied with them, who could connect back to the Sumerian, who could connect back to the Anunnaki. So a lot of the writing from this breakaway faction group looked like ancient Sumerian, although they were Palladian, but they were part of a wider group. That wider group used the emblem of a serpent. We were talking about serpents. Just a snake, not very big, on a lapel or a badge, probably with standing upright, as if you imagine the spinning top, but you put the snake on his pointy end and then the head up, but you put 3 or 4 kinks in it. So it's hard to describe it, but that was their emblem, which then went on to be used in other factions as well. It was a sort of a catch-all group. I've gone right off the topic now. What was the question?
What were they like? What did they look like? I just want to add another question just into this mix, because yeah, it's relevant. There's these stories of runes and these stories of, what's that other, not Sanskrit, cuneiform that right. was written by Maria Orsic in her channelings of these beings.
Yeah.
And do they not sound like German at some point?
Right, right. So the Sanskrit one is a direct connection to the Anunnaki. They call the runic type literally because it was the breakaway group of what we call the Nordics. There is a very close biological connection between Palladians and Nordics. This is the hour show, we can't do it, but basically there is time travel involved here. The Palladian line is a genuine, solid, true line. The Nordic line is not. The Nordics, many of the Nordics that we see have actually come back in time. They come from the distant future back here, basically because they are at war with the reptilians or some of the factions. Long story. But like an archaeologist, when he or she digs in the earth and finds a pot, they can say, oh, well, this pot looks like it's come from the Mediterranean. It's got this in it. It's got that in it. And they can get an idea of where it's come from. When you look at the writing, you're absolutely right, because the Sumerian script was very similar to older Dabrin, script, and one of the breakaway faction groups from the Pleiades who did not use their own. Cuneiform, that's a completely different line. That's coming from a non-reptilian line. But Sanskrit is something that a number of fourth dimensional entities use. So the mantid or mantis group use a form of writing that looks like Sanskrit. So if you were to telepathically receive writing, normally, of course, you don't. You receive pictures or colors or messages. But if you were to see writing, it would look very similar to Sanskrit. So you can't say, oh, that's reptilian or that's this, that. It's a fourth dimensional. A number of races use that because it's a bit like, at the moment, the petrodollar. You know, it is a universal currency. So this type of language, this Sanskrit-like language, which was brought here, was a universal language. So if you were writing Sanskrit here 5, 6, 7, 8,000 years ago, then it's highly likely that that could be understood by an off-planet entity with its own form of similar writing. A really good question. If it had been the 2-hour show, I'd have gone on a bit longer. Thank you.
Awesome answer. Thank you. Yeah, and indeed, I could ask loads more questions. So we'll ask more of that in the future. Now, Serpo, the Zeta Reticulans and the mission to planet Serpo. This is from A Space. What's it? No, A Space. Have you heard anything about the Zeta Reticulans and the mission to planet Serpo and what happened
Okay, well, they are another version of Grey. They are not necessarily benevolent. They were originally independent as a race, and then they came under the sway of what was then the Reptilian Empire. Although they still operate independent operations, so better go on with the question.
Yeah, so basically, have you heard anything about... there was a mission. I recall that the mission to Planet Serpo was send a team of Earth people and receive a team of Zetas. What happened, and when did it happen, when did it end, if it ended?
Well, right, okay. Well, that's something that's made it into the public domain because whistleblowers... wanted people to know the truth about this group reneging on the deals. Often in the case when something gets a highlight, then it's seen as the only one. There have been lots of supposedly joint missions. That's why Spielberg's film showed the little greys coming and taking the humans and them all going off on an expedition. You know, we're all going to go and have a visit and then we'll send a team over, etc. Well, they reneged on the deal. So what happened was that they took the humans off and they never came back. Or if they came back altered or changed. And in terms of what the government on Earth got out of it, was probably precious little. So what did they get? What they got was some supposed advisors who... just basically gave the government the runaround. They got people, little grey creatures who did give technology, but gave technology that sometimes didn't work. Technology that was old by their own standards. So it was not a fair deal. And the reason that, and I quite understand this, why the US felt it had to do this deal was because at the time, it did not have the technology to fight these things off. So it thought, well, we don't trust them as far as we can throw them, but we need time. You know, that's what these presidents did. And I know they get it in the neck and people really attack them. But, you know, imagine if you were the president of the United States and your best generals come to you and say, oh, we haven't got a weapon that will hurt them. We can't stop them. What do you do? Do you say, well, you know, I'm a man of principle. I'll burn every American city in a fruitless war, which we can't win. Or do you say, all right, let's play politics. Let's hang them out. Let's drag it out as long as we can so that we have time to come up with the equipment that we need. And that's exactly what happened. So there were many supposedly, exchange visits. Very rarely did anybody ever come back. It's one of the things that many presidents had to suffer, because they knew damn well that many of these people were never coming back. But they were doing it for the greater good. They were doing it to buy time. Some people did come back. I would imagine that the intelligence network would be onto them like a ton of bricks, as we say in Great Britain. Yeah, so it's true, but please don't see that as just one big thing. It's been happening all the time and is still happening. But, you know, that's the political bit of the top of the pyramid. Below that, there's just a massive amount of trafficking. We talked about paedophilia. Where do you think so many missing children go? You know, where they don't just go into a candy store and disappear. You know, they are taken. Michael Shrimpton, God bless him. A few days ago, an ex-British guy who knows quite a bit about the intelligence network, he's come out and said that paedophilia children were being trafficked in a submarine. And he's absolutely right. And there is a German link here. The Germans, about a year before the end of the Second World War, they were looking to how do they get Adolf Hitler, this isn't widely known, how do they get Adolf Hitler out of Germany undetected? So they designed, and I can't even remember what it was called, an XX3 class, can't remember, but it was a revolutionary submarine that could stay underwater far longer than anything else, recycling the air, running on the power. Absolutely amazing. Could stay under for so long that you could travel great distances without having to surface. And in a submarine, then, as in today, if you come up, you stick your periscope up, that periscope can be detected by microwave radar. You have to remember that the British invented or reinvented microwave radar just before the beginning of the Second World War, traded that with the United States president to get the US into the war quickly. The Americans had the radar. That's why Britain did so well. You know, we had the finest radar of any country in 1939. That's why the Germans got hammered when they were coming over, because the British knew exactly where they were, all by and large. But the Americans took it to the next principle. And remember that they were trying to arm an F-86 Sabre aircraft in 1947 with the early version of the microwave weapon, which we've been talking about, which had come from the British. It was actually a Scottish gentleman. I better get this right. It was a Scottish gentleman in about 1938 who invented microwaves. Anyway, let's get on with it. F-86 Sabre, they tried to load a microwave weapon in that, because when the Roswell situation was occurring, the Roswell spacecraft had been buzzing White Sands for 2 weeks. That's not widely known. 2 weeks before it all crashed and everything came out. And they were attempting to try and knock one of these out with a microwave weapon. It's debatable whether they ever got up. So, I've forgotten the bloody question. This is it. I get so excited with all the potential of, you know, giving out information that sometimes I go off track a little bit. So please forgive me. Did I answer the question?
Right. Well, I've been reading all the other questions to try and find a good question for the next one.
Well, maybe even if I didn't, maybe if that was interesting enough, that'll do.
I think we were just talking about Serpo, though.
Right. So yes is the answer.
Right. Okay. Here's an interesting little. This is one of your clients. Hi, Kylie. This is from Kylie. Hi, Simon and JP. Recently, I had my second attempt at a Skype session with you, then to be purposely cut off after mentioning Freemasons. The night this happened, right. I was attacked during sleep. I was in a dream, and there was a frightening woman which appeared. I smashed an object to wake myself up to find myself in another dream, where I am in bed, and there is an owl to my right, which seemed to have put that woman into my head. I put my hand on the owl, and it started shaking. Why might I be getting harassed by this Illuminati stroke military group and be seeing their craft around me every week? Also, can someone bringing a small gargoyle into the garden result in an entity attachment? Whoa, this is like a Halloween do. Anyway.
Well, it is the 24th of December.
Yeah, sort of.
It is the 24th of December. I'm just getting a message on my phone saying some people can't hear, so I don't know if that's anything. Anyway, right, I think the answer is in the gargoyle. I remember the case. Yes, as the person I was talking to, as the word Freemasonry was mentioned, then we were just cut off. So it does happen quite a lot. Please don't think that that's just you. It regularly happens. Sometimes I can have an hour with somebody and not a single issue. Sometimes I can have 10 minutes and it gets cut off. If you've got a gargoyle that somebody's put in there and you don't even know what it is, then I would suggest it potentially could be either a portal or an entity can reside within it, just like Aladdin's lamp. What I'd like you to do is to get a black cloth and drop the black cloth over the gargoyle. I'm presuming you've still got it. You put the black cloth over it. You don't touch this gargoyle with your hands. Like you would keep a tarot set of cards in a black velvet cloth. It's the same principle. It keeps the magic within it. And then turn it over, tie it up so you've got like a bag with it. And what I would need you to do is to get a piece of iron horseshoe would be ideal, and then you can tape that over the top of the bag, and then you would need to go and get rid of that. Don't bury it on your property. A civic tip, a dumping ground will do. The entity will be trapped in that, and it won't bother you anymore. It happens a lot. It happens to people who have very interesting souls and have a long history on the planet, have a history of fighting black magicians, a whole host of reasons. It's much more common than you'd think. But thank you, and I'm really sorry. We'll try and reconnect after Christmas.
And don't mention it. No, I won't. So, yeah, this is really interesting. Gargoyles living in things and gnomes, garden gnomes as well, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's why, I don't see many people from the church. But, you know, one of the major questions to anybody who's an official of the church is, why are there gargoyles on churches and cathedrals? Surely it's not to scare away good spirits. So it must be to scare away bad spirits. Why do you put these horrible, horrible things on churches? Because bad spirits wouldn't be frightened of that, would they? And surely good people don't want to go into a church with something really grotesque. So this is a question they can't answer. And the reality is that yes, these entities can exist within these horrible things that have been carved or stuck on the edge of churches. You know, why would you have some demonic looking creature, and some of these carvings show them tormenting people? You know, why would you have that on the outside of your building? Because your outside of your church is your shop, isn't it? Because it's all about making money. You want to entice people into your shop because you want them to donate to the church silver, the church roof, and also, of course, I'm sure that many of these church people have, you know, much better cars than I do. My car's 11 years old. Some of these church people driving around in cars that are about 1 or 2 years old. So why would you want to scare them off? Doesn't make any sense. The reality is, that's why I don't have any gnomes. God bless them. I don't have anything like that, because if somebody wants to have a go at you, then you're making it very easy for them. Yeah.
It's all like a little gateway in their house. And because you've accepted it, you're a willing participant in the process.
Well, how many times have we walked past someone's garden and seen the equivalent of Noddy and Big Ears, or the dwarves from any of the Disney films? So they're very popular, and sometimes there's a big market drive, and there's a gnome with a fishing rod, or there's a gnome doing this, don't do that. I just think it's very odd anyway, you know. I think if you've got a garden, why don't you grow some vegetables or grow a beautiful tree or something like that? Why put these stone things that were made by probably a man? They're not really real. They're made of plastic, or, you know, that's just joking. Steer clear of gnomes.
The message for today. Okay, so this is from Sergey. Hi, it would be nice to hear from Simon about all the crypto space that being created, like two ways of Bitcoin versus Bitcoin Cash. Oh, right, the splits in Bitcoin and those forks. I think they call them forks, don't they? And what are not so controlled, but more for the people using cryptocurrencies. Sorry, I'm reading this directly.
Okay.
You get the direction.
English is not the first language. Yeah, English is obviously not the first language. It's very difficult because there's an arm of government which is trying to roll out the cryptocurrencies as fast as possible. So if and when the traditional economy takes a hit, then they've got another system that they've still got some control over. To a certain extent, they can control all cryptocurrencies because ultimately you have to rent a server. You have to rent something somewhere that powers and makes it work. Well, whoever controls that basically is the man or woman in charge. You know, if you think about your own home, you have a television set. So, you know, you own the television set. And you control the television set because you can switch it on and you can switch it off with your remote control. But if somebody turns the power to your home off, then no matter how many times you press the button on that television, it won't work. So what we need to think is, if we're going to invest or do anything, let's look to see who is actually in control of these facilities. Who is it? And, you know, it's widely recognize now that the National Security Agency does that for Bitcoin, but it does not for the others. But we need to see, because, you know, is it sensible to go with something that's based in Russia, for instance, which is much less likely to be turned off than something based in America or Britain or Australia, etc., etc. So, you know, it's about energies finding a balance on the planet between those who started up a cryptocurrency for control purposes and others who just did it for business. Now, if you did it for business, then you're not actually thinking about, I want to control it at that level. Whereas if you are used to manipulating the human race, then you don't see cryptocurrencies as a method to make money. You see it as a method of controlling people. Because at that level, you don't need to make money. Well, they do, but it's not their driving force. So do some research and you'll find there's some pretty good options out there, and there will be between January and March.
So yes, we're getting lots of, getting loads of people calling in, and they're hitting our servers as well. But anyway,
yeah,
we'll just keep going.
I've had a few messages from people saying that they lost sound, and I think it's just that the system's a bit overloaded.
Yeah, must be all the Hillary Clinton's emails getting passed across somewhere. Here's from Toby. Hi, Toby. Question about the deep state. How far and wide do you think President Trump's swamp draining will reach? How far and wide do you think President Trump's swamp draining will reach? So a bit of tongue twister there.
That's all right. It's the 24th, and you're allowed to have some more brandy.
I haven't had the mead yet. We got a tiny drain of mead.
Dear. Well, when you go into politics, you are going into a 3D world, and you have to engage with people who don't know the truth. Actually, they don't want to know the truth. All they want to know is, who's going to give me the cheapest taxes? Who's going to make sure that my iPhone is still going to work, that the gas in the gas station is not going to be too expensive, etc., etc., etc. And unfortunately, those people make up quite a lot of the electorate, the voters, in the Western world. So if you were to come on with your slogan, which is, I'm going to clean up paedophilia, the 10% who understand all this would say, ah, finally, great, we're voting for you. But the other 90% would say, what? Well, you know, but my hamburger cost 7 cents more yesterday. You know, that's more important to me than anything else. Now, I'm not actually being facetious. That's a reality. You know, elections at the moment on this planet are lost and won by the political party that will promise you the most and take away the least. Because most people are serviced to self. So it's like, I want to pay as least taxes as possible, but I want as much as possible. And I'm afraid the two things don't really work. There's always been a balancing act. So when he used the word drain the swamp, it caught on in a way that he didn't really envisage. His version of the swamp are some of the big topics, and we've talked about it today, you know, paedophilia and the complicit involvement in some of the biggest corporations and largest names on the planet, because many of their top people are deeply involved in it or blackmailed by it. So if Trump does nothing else but start outing these guys, for me, he's done a fantastic job. So that's one aspect. There are plenty of other aspects. You know, we talked about the established media won't even go there. One of President Trump's children was badly affected by an inoculation, and Trump decided that he didn't really like pharmaceuticals and he wanted to get involved in politics at a high level to change things. Now, it's very sad, but what a brilliant way to become involved. Most people who go into politics say, I want to earn lots of money. I want to have lots of influence. I want to be very important in the 3D world. I'm going to be this or that. Whereas he decided that he had been affected at a family level and was going to do something about it. Now, there aren't many people in politics who have taken high office because of an ideal. That's the reality of it. So the swamp cannot be drained quickly, because the bad guys have had thousands of years building governments. And Mr. Trump, bless him, has only been in a very short period of time. So let's give him the time. I think we've all said this. Let's give him his term of office and let's see what he achieves. You know, he's not a bad guy. He's a guy who's a billionaire and as such is used to getting his own way. He's of our generation that was very chauvinistic. But he's not a paedophile. He's not a Satanist. Has he got Satanists around him? Yes, of course he has. And I explained this at the Dartington Hall conference. You know, if you've got to talk, and you do, you have to talk to these most powerful people, because they control half of the planet, or three quarters of the planet. And they are saying, we're not going to talk to Trump. But if he appoints a middleman with our background, then we'll deal with him. So that's why so many of these people are like that. And the difficulty for Trump is Zionism. It is the Zionists that are giving Trump the hardest, difficult time. It's not the Russians. It's not the CIA. It's not Hillary Clinton. It is the Zionists. Let's be separate. It's not the Jewish race. It's the Zionist group. That is an issue that he's very careful. And that's why he's been working quite closely with places like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. A very interesting game going on there, trying to put a bit of pressure on Israel. Yes, he recognized, you know, Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And of course that all kicked off a huge argument. and the United Nations said, oh, we're refusing to accept that. They're refusing to accept it, not because they don't believe in it, but because they are part of the enemy and they don't like Donald Trump and they're trying to make him look a fool. The reality is that most major powers have established their embassies in Jerusalem because the Israeli government considers Jerusalem its head, not Tel Aviv. And so if you want to meet important Israeli people, it's Jerusalem you'll meet them in. So most of the staff who go into to the Jerusalem embassies are the top-notch group anyway. And all Trump is doing is saying, look, no one's brave enough to recognize the truth here. So sometimes he'll do something and it's misunderstood, because unless you've been at a high level in politics, they don't understand the double games that are being played. So, you know, just give him time. Let's see what happens with this paedophilia stuff. It's important. Okay, thank you.
Very good. Now, here's a very interesting question. This is from Sue, Children and Spirit Protection. Hi, Simon. I look forward to hearing your regular updates, and thank you. The question that keeps coming up in my mind is regarding the next generations on Earth and how we help them integrate into the new Earth in this time of the dissolving matrix. My 22-year-old daughter is at medical school, and although she is very free-thinking in general, I realize she is maybe being manipulated to fit into the system along with her fellow students. With this in mind, how do you propose we open the minds of this generation, i.e. present-day students in their 20s? Brexit, for instance, troubled many students, for example. And like we're saying, you know, about the person who was at your talk last week. So,
yeah,
thank you. How do we deal? How do we help these people? Because they're going to be in for a big shock, aren't they?
Right. We're actually talking about people who should be more evolved than our generation. Individuals who are born on the planet more recently actually have more about them than most, not all, but most of the older generation. Those of us of a certain generation, whatever that might be, were here to do certain things and take the planet to certain steps. So you have a task, and if you are successful, you fulfill that task, somebody then comes on and picks up the baton and they go on and do another bit. So I'm not convinced it's anybody's job to show young people what they have to do all the way forward. I think that is the easiest way to get them to turn against you. If you say to anybody, particularly a young person, I want to show you this or do that, that is not, in my understanding, that is not the right way to do it. What you've got to do, I believe, is to show that individual, whoever he or she may be, a key fact that is demonstrably provable within the three-dimensional world. And once you can show that the system is deliberately lying, then it is up to that individual to seek his or her own path. Now, if they come back to you and say, could you please help me, that's a completely different matter. If they come to you and say, I need some guidance, or can you steer me, can you train me, can you teach me, whatever it might be, that's very different from somebody who has not made that commitment to you, but seems to be struggling. The reality is that we're all individual souls, and we need to find our own way. Young people are a damn sight more able to see the truth than my generation, and much more involved and capable of saying no, although we tend to think of the 1960s and the seasons of love as the time that young people broke free. They didn't, did they? Because those hippie people are the ones who are now the pillars, or many of them are the pillars of the establishment. So it was a different sort of revolution back then. The revolution we've got going now is far more subtle and is far more helpful. So what I would suggest is that you, instead of talking about flu jabs being full of poisons, or, you know, Hillary Clinton this, that, and the other. Talk about something that's relevant to your country at a local level. And that's what I did at my conference. I actually started off by saying we're going to have a little exercise in power. And I talked about how would we go about organizing a safe place to cross a road. If we have children and it's very dangerous, the car's going too quick, how do we do that? So we had a bit of a game, and I wanted to see how people would go about creating a safe place. And although it's a conference with awake and aware people, the answers that I was getting were the 3D answers, which were, well, we would phone the local council. We would do a petition. We would form a pressure group. We would go to the media. We would do this. And then one person said, well, actually, if you're a very powerful person, you just pick the telephone up and you make it happen. And I said, you've got it. You've got it in one. So the world that we're living in is not as it's portrayed. And if you can begin to show one crack in it, for instance, young people across the planet are horrified at the change in the law that's going to make it very probable they'll charge for internet usage, downloading music that they've never done before. Now that hits young people. So, you know, talk about things that are relevant. If the person's in school, medical work, or is in a school, talk about what they're doing and how does that actually benefit the children or the patients. You know, if it's really about people, why are these things happening? So engage on a level that is meaningful to that person. It's very difficult, I know, but step back. If you're in that person's face all the time, you will not get the change you want. Step back, and hopefully they'll come to you. It's a really, really good question. Thank you.
So, here's, now there's a couple of questions about the ascension process. This is one aspect of this. This is from Steph. Dear Simon and JP, thank you both for a tremendous illuminating 2017. Question. I sense the appearance of two paths, almost like train rails. Does it make sense that both old and new Earth timelines are visible at the same time? It's almost like the momentarily state of consciousness shows the close possibilities ahead.
Yep.
Blissful winter solstice, love and light, Stefan. So, state of consciousness.
Right. Yes, absolutely. So we've got to be careful about 5G because people are talking about singularity. No, we have not reached singularity. We will reach singularity in 18 months if we let it. There are now visible two very, very viable timelines. There have been sometimes up to as many as six, but it's now, these two timelines are so solidifying in human consciousness that there are a number of gifted people on the planet who can be aware of them, or feel them is probably a better word. Two timelines. One is a timeline for, you can't just say for a positive or a negative. One is a timeline where certain individuals have decided that they are ready and they have made that journey and they're going to go to the next stage. And the other timeline is when the majority, and it will be the majority unfortunately, decide that they are too fearful and they are not ready for that. So they're going to have to go on the treadmill and come around again. So they're going to go on a separate time frame. If you're seeing it, I would be quite interested in how you're sensing it. A number of people have talked to me about it. In fact, both the Americans and the Russians have teams now trying to probe down this line. They've even sent things like little nano robots down the tube, if you like. How far can they get? What information can they get back? You know, that's a damn sight better than what they did 30 odd years ago, sending children and many of those kids not ever coming back. But they are attempting to probe these timelines, because there's just two that are very, very, very clear. Good question. Well done. Thank you.
Is this the chronovisor device?
Part of it, yes, part of it. It's something that's come out. It's not modern technology, but the principle is there, and we can trace that right back to the Orion cube or the Orion box that was prized out of the hands of the dying grey creatures from the Roswell space crash. So that those Orion cubes gave humankind the Pandora's box, basically, which was the ability to have some glimpse of the future, but not always a future that was bound to happen.
Interesting, interesting. So, probably the last question. Oh, there's a couple of, yeah, anyway, look, quick question. Decapitation. Do you know, this is from Del Sacto, do you know of any multidimensional or spiritual consequences of being decapitated?
What a strange question. I'm not even going to answer that, because that's not the sort of question that I would entertain. Let me talk about something else much. I'm not dissing the questioner at all. You know, it's a very valid question, but I can see how the energies could play around that and could hijack my answer and take it elsewhere, and I don't want that. This is the last show of 2017, and I wanted to go out with a positive. And I'm just going to take the 2 minutes I would have answered by saying that I'm moving Connecting Consciousness, the organization that I founded, to a more proactive level. 2018 will see the organization playing a much wider role. It's all about money, of course, so I'm hoping that some of the madcap schemes that I'm working on will come through, because I want to be in a position where we have meetings where guest speakers can be bussed in or flown in, talk to our group, where the group then can elect to send a speaker out to another group. That should all be paid for. I want to be in a position to pay my coordinators. You know, I have relied on the most wonderful people who are volunteers, and they got hammered, you know, and you know, what keeps them going is they say, well, I must be doing good, Simon, because if I wasn't, these bad guys would just leave me alone. So that's partly actually what keeps them going, the fact that they know they're doing good. And I want to be able to reward people, and I'd love to do that. But certainly I'm not ever going to make a political party out of Connected Consciousness. Then, you know, you just get sucked into the same old trap. But there are a number of topics or issues that shouldn't just be the preserve of one political party. You know, that's the Democrat Party's bandwagon, or that's the Conservative Party's bandwagon. These are human beings who are suffering or are gaining, however you want to look at it, and there are issues that should cut across all boundaries. So I want 2018 to be when we move Connecting Consciousness, and I always planned this after we got through 2017. It is the next stage. So I'm going to end on a positive note to say to everyone, have a lovely holiday period. Your real Father Christmas is green, because he's the green man. He's not the Coca-Cola Father Christmas, not, you know, your Satan Claus. So, you know, let's just remember that there was a real, earlier version of Christmas than the one that we are sold in the shops. But nevertheless, it's a holiday period, and I want everyone to, enjoy themselves, take the time, remember that service to others must be our watchword. Okay, the days of service to self now are being reduced, thank goodness. And I look forward in 2018 to coming back, and God willing, if Source will provide it, we will carry on, and we'll do what we can. So thank you, JP. God bless to you and to all the listeners.